Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable podcast. I'm your host today, Jake Jackman. You get us on the show on Twitter at EPL Roundtable or email us eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi everyone, James Smith, freelance football writer. I'm here to talk about
Burnley. Hi everybody, my name's Thomas Barth. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, which is unsurprisingly a website dedicated to Wolverhampton Wanderers. You can get me at wolvesblog.com or at twitter/wolvesblog.
Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. We'll start with the biggest story of the week coming out of the Premier League, and that was regarding Manchester City, who out of nowhere have received quite a serious punishment from UEFA. They've been banned from the Champions League for 2 seasons, which will start next year. So if they do finish in the top four this season, they will not get a place in the Champions League unless that changes. Word coming out of City is they're going to appeal it, as all the top clubs seem to do with these bans. And they know whether it's transfer ban or UEFA competition ban, they seem to appeal and they seem to get a little bit more lenient. So it's yet to be seen if they are actually going to be banned. But if they are, it's a big game changer for the Premier League. It's a big game changer for City. And it's probably quite a big win for FFP, which seems to not have had a big impact at the top level, with it a lot more serious punishments lower down the Football League. But this is the first big one for a Premier League club, so I just want to get your guys' thoughts on it. Do you think it's a fair punishment for City? And how do you think it's going to impact sort of the rest of the Premier League season if that fifth place does become available for Champions League qualification?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, this, isn't it? I'm not sure whether it's fair or not, really. We've only got so much information at hand from what's been released. City have obviously claimed all along that they haven't done anything wrong. But it's not the first time that they've been done for FFP either. A few years ago, they were fined, I think it was £49 million by UEFA as well. They had the Champions League squad size cut, so it's not like they haven't been warned, essentially. City's argument also seems quite interesting because it essentially seems to be everyone else is also breaking the rules. Why are you coming after us? They've been quite aggressive, I think, in the way that they've handled it from the off. They've always insisted that the information that was reported in Der Spiegel, the German magazine, was from hacked material. So they've refused to comment on the veracity of that information, essentially. And I think the way that they have gone about it is quite, I think it's partly why UEFA have come down on them so hard. I think if they'd been a bit more conciliatory, then maybe UEFA would have been more keen to do some sort of deal. I think the fact that it's a two-season ban means that there is some leeway for the ban to be reduced on appeal. Obviously, we've seen this a lot in sport. Chelsea's transfer ban was a recent example. It was 2 windows, then it was reduced to 1 on appeal. So I think there's every chance that UEFA have factored that in. But I'm sure City will fight it 100% as hard as they can to try and avoid this punishment, because obviously it's got huge implications for them. It's difficult to see Pep Guardiola sticking around if they're not going to be in the Champions League. I know he said that he's going to stay out his contract, but it's hard to imagine him doing that if they're not in the Champions League. But players like Sergio Aguero, who are coming towards the end of their careers, haven't won a Champions League. They're surely not going to want to play for a club that aren't in that competition. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it all shakes out. But from what has been reported, the information that's in the public domain, it's difficult to argue that City haven't had it coming to them. I think it seems quite obvious that they have fiddled the rules. Other clubs might have done it as well, but they seem bang to rights to me.
Yeah, I mean, on the issue of whether it's fair is difficult to say conclusively without seeing the full package of information. What I would say is, from the outside looking in, you see the money that Man City have spent on players for a long time. I know this date, you were mentioning off air, Jake, that it dates back to a long time ago. So whether any of what I'm about to say is relevant, I don't know. But they seem to have spent a lot of money on incoming transfers. And I don't remember them netting significant money from player sales. So it's kind of, you always got the feeling that they were playing fast and loose with financial fair play and possibly exposing loopholes to allow them to continue doing the business that they've done to build the, you know, immense squad that they've got. But, you know, if it is being exposed, there must be a high level of, exposure there on their part for them to be handed out such a severe ban. And so you've got to assume that it is something fairly grievous. And in that instance, maybe it stands to reason that it probably is a fair punishment. But as I say, without knowing, I wouldn't want to comment too conclusively. Do I expect it to stand? Absolutely not. I would probably predict fairly confidently in the here and now that what will actually end up happening is they won't get any ban at all. And it'll just be solved with money. It'll be a large fine, a warning, some kind of compromise where it means, okay, they take a slap on the wrist and they pay some money and they're made an example of, but they don't really miss out on the competition. That would probably be my prediction in the here and now for how it will unfold. But I mean, another point I would make is that if it's kind of farcical, if they are banned for 2 years, that they're still in the competition now, because surely if they've been found guilty, and UEFA is saying, you've done this, we don't want you in our competition, they should be kicked out right now of this year's, because how silly would it be for them to progress into the latter stages and even potentially win the competition, knowing full well that they might not be in it for the next 2 years? It just seems, a bit cag-handed that's where we're at with it.
Yeah, I think that's the bit that I agree with. It seems that there's a big potential for this to blow up in UEFA's faces and Manchester City to go on and win it this season. Then you've got the extra pressure to get them in the competition next season as holders. You've also got the Super Cup, the World Club Cup as well, all those things that City would be rightfully allowed to go in, but whether they'd be allowed to or not, and who would take their place, it would all become a little bit odd. But the one thing I would say is that the fact that they've been banned for two seasons seems that the obvious way out is to decrease that to one. That way City may be coming out saying that they've limited it and UEFA still got that sort of, still see it as a win at getting them out of the competition for one season. But it seems strange. A lot of what I've read on it this week is that Manchester City weren't expecting this to happen. They sort of thought that a ban had been taken off the table in the legal proceedings that they've been a part of. It didn't seem that was likely. Then it seems to have come out of nowhere that it has. So be interested to see what happens. They're obviously going to throw a lot of money at legal fees. It's obviously going to probably be heard quite quickly. It's got to be resolved before sort of June, July time, you'd expect. But we had, I think it was a few years ago, AC Milan had a similar ban. They were banned from the Europa League. I think it was Fiorentina were in pre-season training to take their spot. Then at the very last minute, it got rescinded and AC Milan were allowed back in sort of at the 11th hour. So whether something similar with City happens, be interesting. Like Jamie says, obviously a lot of the older players in Guardiola wouldn't want to stick around if they weren't in the Champions League. I've read there's going to be a lot of wage hits as well. There's clauses in the contracts that if they're not in the Champions League, the wage should go down. But the players would probably argue that that's not their fault. They're not in it. So maybe they won't apply. So it's going to be an interesting one to follow. Gearing it a little bit back to the Premier League. Obviously, City are comfortably in the top four at the moment. But if they're not going to be allowed in the competition, it opens up the Champions League race even further. You currently got Tottenham in fifth place, but you got Sheffield United, Wolves, Everton, Manchester United and Arsenal, Burnley, even Jamie, if we go down that far, all within 6 points of that fifth position. Become quite a race to get into that top five now, and we'll open that back up. Do you think that will be a positive thing if that happens? And do you think that maybe we could see somebody like a Wolves or Sheffield United get into that Champions League, which would be an incredible achievement, really?
I think it is positive, yeah. I think the race for fourth, as it's always known as, it's been awful this season, hasn't it? I mean, Chelsea have been so bad for large parts of the season. Spurs the same. Obviously, they've picked up since Jose Mourinho came in. The fact that it was those two sort of scrapping over it with pretty mediocre points tallies suggested that it was going to be who fell over the line more than anything else. So the fact there's an extra place widens it out. I think it could prove to be a bit of a let-off for Chelsea or Spurs if they manage to hold on to the positions that they're in now. But certainly massively opens the door for the chasing pack. Like you say, Manchester United, if they beat Chelsea on Monday night, they're right back in it. Everton aren't that far away either. And obviously Sheffield United and Wolves are two to really look out for. Sheffield United would have been sort of cautiously optimistic that they can get into the Europa League, and now suddenly they're a point outside the Champions League places. So, yeah, it's crazy the implications it could have for the Champions League. Burnley play Sheffield United at home in a few weeks, actually, and that looks like it could be a battle for European football. There's not too many people would have thought that at the start of the season. To place that into some sort of context, obviously, Wolves got into the Europa League the season they came up, but I think they spent a lot more money doing it than Sheffield United have this season. They seem to be still relying on a lot of the players they were using in League One under Chris Wilder. So they've built that team and moved up through the leagues, added some signings, of course, but they haven't spent a fortune by any means. So a real opportunity for all those clubs that you mentioned in the chasing pack to think, this is our chance. It's never going to be more open to get into the Champions League than it is going to be this season, assuming the punishment stands. And obviously, with the way the cups can pan out, it looks like eighth place could then get into the Europa League as a knock-on effect. So, yeah, certainly clubs like Sheffield United, Wolves, Burnley, massively there to play for now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's... Has it actually been determined that if Man City don't get it, then it just rolls down the league? I'm not...
I don't think it's been properly said, but it's yeah. Assumed.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, I think... Yeah, I mean, the suspicion is that it will probably just, like you say, it's... Jamie touched upon there, it's... It'll probably be a get-out-of-jail card. That's probably what it'll end up being for Man United or Tottenham or Chelsea or Arsenal, someone like that, which is frustrating, really. But yeah, I mean, it is exciting. It was exciting anyway because, you know, Chelsea have been wobbling big time. Tottenham have sort of been getting their act together, but not really. I mean, I still feel they've been very lucky in some of the results they've picked up. I don't feel they're a very complete team at the moment. I think they've got some good players at the top end of the pitch who sort of bail them out a bit. And, you know, Man United have been very hit and miss. Arsenal are sort of suggesting maybe they're going to get a couple of wins together. I don't know. So it is exciting because I think it was exciting already with the idea that someone different might actually challenge for fourth place. So with the fact that it could roll down to fifth and then push all the other European places down, it will make for an exciting finish because I don't think Wolves or Sheffield United will completely go away. I don't look at the way they're playing in any of the games and think, oh, they're getting lucky here. I actually, personally, I mean, I'm a Wolves fan, obviously. I think Wolves are underplaying. I don't think they're hitting their stride at all. And, you know, we've got some winnable fixtures to come. We've got Norwich and Bournemouth at home, and we're still going to go and play Arsenal and Chelsea and Tottenham. So, I mean, it's all very much to play for. But I think, you know, it's exciting, you know, for an outsider because I think it should mean that right up to the wire, hopefully, because no team has really achieved consistency or looked like doing it, but right up to May, hopefully, there'll be European football up for grabs.
Yeah, I think it's definitely exciting. Sheffield United are obviously... up there at the moment in sixth position. Great first season for them as a promoted club, sort of replicating what Wolves did last season in sort of surpassing all achievements, all expectations. But I guess it's even more remarkable for Sheffield United given the players they have and the manager they've got who were all unproven at this level. I've heard a lot of things from pundits sort of being mixed on what Sheffield United should want. I think it's Tony Cascarino, not the most reliable pundit in the world, but he's saying it would be the last thing that he'd want as a Sheffield United fan to go into Europe and have that added stress of games. So I just wanted to get both of your guys' thoughts, as you're both well placed. Burnley were in Europe a few seasons ago, and obviously Wolves this season with a smaller squad are in the Europa League. Do you think it is a good or bad thing? I mean, obviously, as a supporter, you've got to be aiming for the best possible thing, and that's European competition. You know, you've got the trips away there that you wouldn't have expected all those seasons ago in the Championship, League One, as Sheffield United were. Surely you've got to want that as a fan. And do you think that is a wholly negative thing, or do you think that's just a sort of lazy media cliche that it is a bad thing for the club?
Yeah, I mean, who am I to argue with an oracle like Tony Cascarino? But it's absolute rubbish, isn't it? I mean, if you're not striving to be as good as you can be, what is the point of football? You can say Leicester won the league a few years ago. It looks like the league is already sort of locked down to prevent anything like that from happening again. But yeah, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Burnley in Europe. It was the first time for 50 years that had happened. So fans like me, first time in our lifetime, vast majority of fans never had the chance to see Burnley in Europe. And all right, we had trips like Aberdeen that weren't the most glamorous, but still a fantastic experience. And I'll always be able to say that I've seen my team play European football. Nothing can ever take that away from me. And yes, it affected our league form, which I think is inevitable when you're working with a smaller squad. But we still survived, and that's always going to be our first aspiration. So I think if you're a Sheffield United fan, you absolutely wanted to get into Europe. What's the alternative? Hope that you finish ninth, miss out, and then next season, what are you trying to do next season? You've always got to try and push on. I think at the start of the season, Burnley should have been looking at a top 10 place. And now that it looks like that's within reach, this has to be the next aspiration. You always have to look to try and push on. The extra games, you find a way to cope with it. Wolves are seventh again this season. They finished, seventh last season to get into Europe. It doesn't seem to have affected them that much. You learn to handle the extra games. It doesn't have to be that much of a downside. I just think that pundits like Cascarino are just completely cut off from what it's actually like to be a football fan now. It's so unrealistic for you to have success like winning the league, even a cup competition. It's so hard to do that now. The gap between the elite and everyone else is so massive. The Europa League is a little way to extend it to the sort of lesser lights. Teams like Burnley, teams like Wolves, who were unlikely to get into the Champions League. I know Wolves are aiming to do that eventually. Yeah, I just think it's nonsense to say that Sheffield United fans wouldn't want to be in Europe. Tony Cascarino needs to go out and find a Sheffield United fan who thinks that, because I'm positive that nobody will be saying that. If they get into Europe, they'll be absolutely buzzing and rightly so.
Yeah, if you're a Sheffield United fan like you are, a Wolves fan last season and Burnley the season before that, I think you know that as well as your team's doing, it can disappear in a puff of smoke. You know, next season you might be in a relegation battle and you might be back in the Championship, and you know, it was all just a dream, basically. So you gobble up whatever you can get. You know, Wolves were in a cup semi-final last season, brilliant trip to Wembley, European football, you know, playing in Spain and Turkey and Italy, fantastic, absolutely brilliant. So, and I'm sure Sheffield United fans feel exactly the same. And, you know, particularly because of their attitude and how Chris Wilder sets up, you know, he's not going to hide behind the excuse of too many games. I think he was the one who was saying he didn't want the winter break. You know, he wanted to keep playing, keep going. They're that kind of team, high energy, fine. You know, if they do qualify for Europe and maybe it affects their league form next season, so be it. But I think they'd probably find that they'd cope with it. No problem. I do understand teams like Arsenal and Tottenham, and who've tasted the latter stages of the Champions League, and then now they kind of feel like they're, the sideshow. But believe me, that's not how it feels when you're not one of those elite clubs who have been doing European football season in, season out. It just feels great. I kind of thought that the Europa League going into it, it would feel like it feels when I tune in on a Thursday night and see some Arsenal playing their third team or, you know, in the half-empty stadium. But that's not how it's been. You know, at Wolves, it's been packed-out stadium. We're playing our best team. We're legitimately trying to win this competition. And with a real chance of doing so, it'll be very difficult, of course. But at the end of the day, it's another route into the Champions League. So it's a massive thing. And no one would want to play Sheffield United, believe me. No team over two legs, the way they play. So, to echo what Jamie said again, you grab it with both hands if the opportunity's there. And as a fan, there's just absolutely nothing better.
Yeah, I think I agree. There is no point being a football fan and wanting to finish 9th and 10th. It is utterly pointless. And Sheffield United, who knows, in 5 years' time, they might be back in the Championship. You know, we've seen teams come up, do well, trail off. I think Swansea are a good example. They were in Europe not so long ago, back in the Championship now. So you've got to take everything you can in the extra exposure, the extra pull for players. It will have a big effect. You know, you've already seen what the players they can manage to attract with Sander Berge in January. Getting into Europe will only give them bigger appeal to players. So it's only going to be a good thing. And it would just be an incredible achievement for a promoted club, probably even eclipsing Wolves last season, considering the comparable expectations of the two teams. I think a lot of people expected Wolves to come up and do quite well. Maybe not as well as they did, but it was expected they weren't going to go down and they were going to do well at Premier League level. With Sheffield United, there are many people's favourites to go down. So if they do get into Europe, that would be an incredible achievement. Don't think I quite buy into some people saying it would be enough to get Chris Wilder manager of the season ahead of Klopp, but you know, there is a case for it, I guess, and it would be one of the best managerial achievements we've seen in a long time in the Premier League, so would be a great story, and hopefully they can go on to do that.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Moving on now to our clubs, we'll start with you, Jamie. Obviously been a good few weeks for Burnley, up now in 11th, 34 points, all but safe with that points total. It seems to have come, you know, a long way in the last four games in particular, down on 24 points not so long ago, got 10 points in four matches, relatively safe now. Do you think that it was always going to happen with Burnley? Do you think there was never really any chance of them going down, given just how solid they are and experienced at this level compared to some of the teams down there?
I don't think you can ever be complacent, can you? Because we've seen teams look like they're established and then results start going the wrong way and it's difficult to get out of a bad run. But I think we've seen now that Burnley in the Premier League this time out, it does seem to be sort of peaks and troughs. We have like three or four games where we don't get results. We had a really bad result at home to Aston Villa New Year's Day. And after that game, I think people were genuinely speculating that we might be the one team that always gets sucked into it from mid-table, as everyone likes to say. But I don't think there was real panic among the fan base. But similarly, I don't think the results since then could really be predicted. People were looking at the run of games that we had, Leicester, Man United, Arsenal, and thinking could quite easily lose those three games and then be out at the back of that run with the Southampton game on Saturday as well and have taken 10 points from four games. It just shows how quickly things can turn in this league, and It's so congested, the sort of middle part of the table. It only takes a couple of wins put back together, and then you start moving up the table. So, yeah, I've always been trying to look up the league rather than down it. And I think the last couple of results have moved us closer to the sort of European places than the bottom three. And Villa losing today, if anyone was still having any sort of lingering doubts that Burnley could drop down, then that probably puts paid to it, because there is quite a big cushion there. So, yeah, certainly looking onwards and upwards, our next two games are fairly winnable. I think Bournemouth at home, Newcastle away. So, obviously, you can't count chickens before they hatch, but if we were to continue in the vein of form that we are and get results in those two games, then we're going to be right in the mix for the top eight, as I think we might have to start calling it. So, yeah, absolutely delighted. I think it's testament to the hard work of the team, Dyche, all his staff. They never change the way they go about things. It's just sometimes the results don't come, and then other times they do. At the minute, we look like we're very hard to break down, not conceding soft goals. So I think a Dyche Burnley team is always going to be quite hard to beat, and I think that's what we're seeing at the minute.
Yeah, it'd be interesting just to quickly speak about Dyche, because a lot of managerial jobs have come up in the Premier League over the last 2-3 seasons in the time that he's been doing very well at Burnley. We've obviously seen Eddie Howe at Bournemouth sort of drop off a little bit this season, but with Dyche it seems to be quite consistent. And I think even in the season that you went down when you were up previously, I think a lot of people were quite impressed with the job that he did in that season. It wasn't... There were encouraging signs, and he definitely seemed to have learned from that season, and has just become just a very, very good manager that doesn't seem to get the credit he deserves. Do you think that he is a little bit underrated still, compared to what, you know, Graham Potter was talked up at the start of the season, and you look at where Brighton are now, it seems crazy that somebody like Dyche still doesn't really get the respect he deserves.
I think Potter's an absolutely fantastic example. Now, his record looks good so far, and he's moved up and impressed at clubs along the way, and I think he's deserved a shot at it. But the fact that they gave him a 6-year deal when he was 3 months into the job or something, it's just absolutely nuts. And I don't really see Brighton's football as being that amazing. People say that he's sort of revamped them from the Chris Hughton era, but they're not getting better results. So yeah, Potter's a funny one for me, but I think I don't want to be one of those football fans going, oh, it's the media, but it's kind of the media, isn't it? The media have their darlings. Graham Potter was a darling for a time this season. Managers come in and out of fashion, and I think Dyche has never really been in fashion. I think now it's just, I don't know whether he's underrated. I think everyone's now just used to what he brings to the table. Everyone knows the way that Burnley are going to set us up. They're going to be physical. They're going to be hard to break down, play direct football. And that's just what you're going to get when you play against Burnley. So I think that's probably counted against him when we talk about the jobs that have come up. Everton, I think, have looked at him before and decided that they could do better. And this time, you can't really argue with that, because Carlo Ancelotti's won the Champions League 3 times. I'm not going to say that Dyche should get the job instead of Carlo Ancelotti, but he could have had a shot at it before. I think Everton's a good example of a club that would be a bit of a step up. There'd be more money to spend, more aspirations. It would be interesting to see if he can deliver more stylish football with a budget that allows him to bring in players who can do that. But the flip side is he's been at Burnley 6-7 years. He's had the chance to bring in players to change things, and he's obviously comfortable with the way that Burnley play. So I think that's what stands in his way from getting the next job up. And I think you're right. It's the consistency sort of means that he goes under the radar a bit. Burnley can go to Man United and win. The first time the club's done that for 60 years or something. People just go, it's Dyche's Burnley. They'll get these results. They're bloody some noses sometimes. So I think if clubs that just come up have gone to Man United and won, and all right, Man United are a mess this season, but I think it would be hailed as a much more epochal result for a little team to go away and do that. But people just don't seem to pay any attention to Burnley now, and I think we're quite happy with that. It's difficult to even know what to say talking about Dash and his future, because it doesn't look like bigger clubs are going to come in for him. So I think we're quite happy to have him. He's quite happy to be here. There doesn't seem to be any massive ambition from him to go and try his luck somewhere else. So I think for now we just carry on as we are, and Burnley fans will be absolutely thrilled to see him just continuing to do a really good job.
Yeah, I think if you look at the teams in the Premier League at the moment, the only teams you could argue that might go for Dyche are all below Burnley in the table. Maybe Palace might be interested if Hodgson goes. Aston Villa perhaps.
You said, but like, why not Arsenal? Why did Mikel Arteta get that job? He's got no CV. He just used to play for them, right? Are Arsenal a better team now under Arteta than they were under Unai Emery? No. As I said, they've got a good win today, but they're soft. They're dull to watch most of the time. They don't have any backbone. Now, I'm not saying Sean Dyche should be Arsenal manager, but if Sean Dyche was Arsenal manager, that team would fight and they would work hard, and you would not see players walking through games like they do now. So I think some of the sort of morals that managers like Dyche and Chris Wilder bring to teams, they're sort of gone out of the game, I think, at big clubs. You see Man United players do the same. They walk through matches and it just wouldn't be stood for by Alex Ferguson or Arsene Wenger. They just wouldn't have it. So I think it's fascinating that you can look at Arsenal being level on points with Burnley in the table and think our manager would never have a shot at doing that job. I don't see why. I think Arteta, I'm not going to write him off already, but I don't think he's done anything yet to warrant being given that job.
No, I definitely agree there. It was a sentimental decision, and definitely one based on his what he did as a player and his weird relationship with Pep Guardiola and the fact he was given that job. But yeah, he had no managerial career at all, and it hasn't improved too much at Arsenal, despite the emphatic win today. But moving on to you now, Thomas, and Wolves. It seems every time you come on this podcast, there seems to have been a VAR decision in the Wolves game, and it's happened again this weekend on Friday night. It seems that Wolves continually get involved in these controversies. It must just be getting tiring as a fan now, even if, you know, you can see the decisions are, there is a case that they're correct, even though they do create huge controversies. They seem to be the biggest controversial ones on Twitter do involve Wolves, and it must be annoying at this point.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's Wolves have been so badly impacted by it that I'm just not committing to celebrating any goals. I mean, I was in the stand right behind that goal, and I thought as soon as the ball hit the net, I was worried because I sort of half celebrated, and then I thought, hang on a minute, there was sort of a short corner routine, and then it was played to the back post, and Doherty was behind the final man. You know what I mean? And then he sort of climbed up above the defender. I thought, is that a foul? You just think there's so many things that that referee's looking for. You think something's going to drop, basically. It's been ridiculous. And I mean, what it eventually got chalked off for was, it's so marginal. It's just painful to accept, whether you accept or debate the hyper-correctness of it all. You know, it is another matter, but it's so difficult to take. It's so deflating. Talking as about live football, being there in the stadium, it's horrible. It is ruining the game. I would personally rather not have any video technology based on being in the stadium. I think people watching it at home and it's not your team, you can take a slightly more scientific view of it. But anyone who's in the ground and actually supports one of these teams would say, you know, it's got to either be fundamentally changed or it's got to be scrapped altogether, because it's just spoiling the game, basically.
Yeah, we've got more into the game now. Obviously, 0-0, not the worst result against a decent Leicester team, but Wolves probably had the better chance in the game. Jimenez had a couple of good chances, one in either half. Do you think that it was one that, if you'd have won, you'd have the momentum to maybe push on and move higher in the league before the Europa League returns? Because that's obviously going to be the big distraction now. I know we talked about it earlier, but we'll still have a small squad, and it will be a lot of games depending how far you get into the competition. So this seemed like a missed opportunity, although it, the performance was still good and you're still in a strong position. It just seemed like a missed opportunity for me watching it.
Yeah, we just can't grab the ball by the horns. There's everything in that Wolves team tells me that the ingredients are there to be a very good team and be a force and be really pushing that top four on the basis that I don't think the top four is actually that good, save for the top two. So, you know, we've got defenders who can defend really well and bring the ball out. We've got two brilliant central midfielders. We've got attacking players who open doors and do great things. And it should all come together, and it's just not quite happening. We just stutter through games. We don't get the results. We couldn't beat Newcastle, couldn't put them to the sword. We had Liverpool on the rack at 1-1, and they found the way to win. Again, against Leicester, I felt we were the better team in that game. I think we nullified them. Vardy barely touched the ball. Madison did next to nothing. And we, as you say, Jota forced a good save. Traore forced a good save. Jimenez missed a couple of headers and should have scored. We had a goal that was more or less debatable, but we scored a goal. We're a bit of a nearly team. It's frustrating because I really feel that the opportunity is there. If I'm being honest, I think we're a better team than Sheffield United. I think we're a better team than Arsenal. I think we're a better all-round team than Tottenham. I'm not saying that, those teams don't have some better players in a lot of areas of the pitch, but I think front to back, as a balance, we should be doing better. So I really think we're underperforming at the moment. So getting back to your original point, yeah, it was a missed opportunity against Leicester, and it's just one of a catalogue of missed opportunities for Wolves recently.
Yeah, it's 12 draws seems to back that up. But a little bit more on the Europa League, now obviously that returns, having a small squad, are you worried that's going to impact the Premier League at all? Or do you still think that it's going to go similar to how the first half of the season went and that the players will have enough in the tank to continue to do well, probably helped by the kind of run of fixtures coming up?
Yeah, I'd hope so. I mean, like I said, they've dealt with it well. We've just had a two-week break. Should feel pretty refreshed. We've recently got Willy Bolly and Jota back from injury. And we brought in Daniel Podence. Still not quite sure how you say his name, but I think it's Podence. And suddenly you've got three, four players off the bench that we didn't have in the run-up to Christmas. So that will help with rotation. I think a couple of players will go in. Obviously, we're getting towards the business end of the Europa League now. So I expect us to play our strongest team every single game in the Europa League and challenge on two fronts. But I do still expect us to be able to maintain a push in the Premier League, only based on what I've seen so far. I think it will just be more a case of if we pick up injuries. We've been quite lucky with injuries. We've lost Bolly, but he's back now. We lost him for a couple of months. And as I say, Jota's been kind of in and out with fitness. But if we keep this, if we keep the squad fit, then I don't think there's any issue with us contesting it on two fronts. Obviously out of the FA Cup and the League Cup, so no games there. I don't think in isolation, just the fact that we've got to play European football will be to our detriment.
Just moving into Player Watch now before we wrap up with the match previews. I just want to get each of your guys' thoughts on a player at your club that you think is going to be the most important over the rest of the season, whether that is to challenge for Europe or to maintain good form, go for the Europa League. Who do you think is the player at your club that is going to be most important to that ultimate aim?
Yeah, I think there's only really one guy that I can talk about in this slot this week, and it's got to be Matej Vydra. Scored a superb winner to get us the points at Southampton. And this is a guy who's career at Burnley, he's just not got started. He's never really had a run in the side, a chance to show what he can do. He found himself down the pecking order, and there was a lot of talk in January that he was going to leave. Apparently, he had a move to Rangers lined up. It was a case of signing a replacement. I'm not sure that was ever on the cards. But I think you've got to say a fair play to him. He's stuck around. He's clearly very popular with his teammates after what they said after the game on Saturday. They clearly respect him and like him a lot. He seems to be extremely popular. I think you can see from the celebrations of the goal as well. He's clearly got a lot of technical quality. I've not been sure if he really fits into a sort of Daesh team because he is more technical and physical. But I think the way that we ended the Southampton game with Vidra up front with Jay Rodriguez, it offered sort of a different template for how a Burnley team can play under Daesh. They're not going to win as much in the air, but we'll be able to play through the midfield a lot better because they're better on the ball than Chris Wood and Ashley Barnes. Wood went off injured on Saturday. Doesn't sound like it's too serious, but he could be out for a few weeks. So I think Vidra will get his chance now. This is a guy who's started a handful of Premier League games in the 18 months that he's been at the club. But he's clearly got a lot of ability in the Championship. He's piled up goals, scored 22 in a season, 21 in a season. So there's clearly something about him. See from his goal against Southampton that he can certainly finish. And that was an outstanding goal technically. He's brought the ball down, beat the defender, and then hammered it into the top corner. So I'm really excited to see if he can now build on that and hopefully use it as a bit of a springboard because, like I say, he's not really had a chance. It's been difficult for him to get in because Daesh has these players that he likes. He likes to rely on the same team. And rightly so because they normally play well enough to keep the product. But this is going to be an opportunity for him. And if he wants to play in the Premier League and prove that he can do it, this is going to be his chance to shine now. So I think it will mean a slight change in our style of play because we're not going to be able to knock as many balls up to the big lad up front because we're not going to have a big lad up front. So, yeah, we might be a bit more interesting to watch in the next couple of weeks as well.
For Wolves, I would say Jota, going back to my previous point about us not really being able to get over the line, being sort of nearly there in a lot of the performances, looking for what's going to possibly give us the edge, both in the league and in Europe. And I think it's Jota. His form this season hasn't been good. He's hardly scored any goals. He finished like an express train over the second half of last season. There was big hopes that he was going to put together a full season, but it hasn't happened again. So what I hope is that he, again, kind of finds his rhythm in this final stretch of games, and he can be the one with goals and assists who makes the difference, because I think Traore and Jimenez will carry on doing what they're doing, and they will win us our share of games, but Jota could be the one if he can just find a spell of form, and backed up by what's really a fairly consistent team and set of performers, he can give us the X factor. So I'm hoping it's going to be Jota.
Yeah, and before we wrap up, we will move on to match previews for next week. Starting with you, Thomas, obviously got a game in the Europa League before the Premier League action. So you got a home game against Espanyol from La Liga. How do you see that one going? Are you confident that you can get a first leg lead?
Yeah, I'm confident. Only because I'm confident of Wolves giving most people a game. I think we've proven that on our day we will do that against most teams. Espanyol are a bit of an unknown. I wish I could say I was an aficionado of European football, but I'm not. I'm aware that they're bottom of the Liga. I know they sacked their manager fairly recently and they brought another guy in and they've since had some results. I think they got a draw with Barcelona fairly recently. And I think they've got their own striker called Raul, who's scoring goals for fun. Also came from Benfica, I believe. So I think they're coming in with a bit of form. And obviously they qualified from their group as winners. So they can't be too bad. They're a bit of an unknown quantity as far as I'm concerned. But I would hope that, a team that's bottom of the league or bottom for a reason, and we can exploit that, and we should have the players. As I say, we'll pick our best team. I'm confident that Molyneux will give them a good game. And actually, I think Wolves are well set up for two-leg European ties because I think we're quite good home and away. I think we can do both things. Some teams are better at playing a kind of more withdrawn role away, and then some teams are better at getting on the front foot home. I think Wolves strike quite a good balance. So I do fancy us to win on Thursday. hopefully get a lead, whether it's, I'd accept any lead. And then if we are ahead in the second game, I'd fancy us to get the job done. So, I'm reasonably confident.
Yeah, and Jamie, Burnley have got a home game against Bournemouth next week. Looks to be a winnable one on paper. Do you think you're going to get another win this weekend?
Yeah, it's a good fixture for this, actually. Bournemouth, like Southampton, actually a team that we do tend to do quite well against in the Premier League. Won 4 of the last 5 meetings. Bournemouth also pretty rotten away from home. Obviously had that win at Chelsea, but 7 defeats either side. So, yeah, you certainly have to look at it as being a winnable game. I think one of the issues we have sometimes in home games when we are expected to win is that it's harder for us to break teams down if they come and try and defend. But Bournemouth either can't or won't do that. They'll want to have the ball, be in possession, try and control it, and we'll play on the break. So I think the game will be set up to suit us quite nicely. To be honest, there's always quite an interesting little subplot with this because obviously Eddie Howe is in charge there and he was in charge of us for a little bit before he decided to go home. So I think that adds a little bit of spark for some fans. I'm not that bothered, but some people think it makes it a more exciting game. Bournemouth are obviously fighting for their life. So if you look at the table, you look at the form of the two teams on paper, it's certainly one that Burnley should be looking to win. If we are going to have aspirations of pushing for European football, which, as I said earlier, I think we should. I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't be pushing to do that, given the teams around us in the table, Arsenal, Manchester United. We've had good results against them in the last few weeks. I think we're as good as them this season. I think that's certainly something we should aim for. And 3 points at the weekend would be another step towards challenging for that.
And with that, we are now out of time for today's podcast. So if you'd just like to tell everybody where they can reach you, now would be a good time.
Yeah, thanks for everyone who's been listening. If you want to read any of my stuff or follow me on Twitter, you can do that at Jamie Smith Sport.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. My name's Thomas Boff. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, which is where you can log on to if your team's playing Wolves. Good chance to read up on the Wolves perspective. We're normally pretty fair on there. And you can get us on Twitter at WolvesBlog or at facebook.com/WolvesBlog.
Yeah, and just thanks so much for both of you for joining me today. You can get me on Twitter at Jackman with 2 N's. I've got something going up on the Eagle Speak this week for Jay, talking about the Newcastle game, probably ranting about how bad Steve Bruce is despite the points tally that remains on the table. Check that one out. We'll also have a championship show coming up tomorrow night as well, so give that one a listen when it is out. And I'd just like to thank all of you for joining us today, and we hope you join us again next time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.